In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 352. We're talking about progressivism today with Jim Ostrowski. Jim is a lawyer in Buffalo. He's an associated scholar of the Mises Institute, and he's the author of the new book, Progressivism, A Primer on the Idea Destroying America. This book and other details of our conversation can be found on the show notes page for today, which is tomwoods.com/352. Don't forget, I'll be speaking at Auburn University this coming Saturday, March 7th, 2015. So check out details on that at tomwoods.com/events, and then American University and the University of Cincinnati in early April. You'll also find those on that page. All right, here we go. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
Pleasure is mine. This is one of these books that you hear the title and you feel like you got to go out and buy it. I think that's been the case with a lot of people. Progressivism, A Primer on the Idea Destroying America. Let me start off playing devil's advocate here. I wonder if it's not statism that's destroying America rather than progressivism per se. And the reason I say that is that I thought that maybe a silver lining that could come out of two terms of Barack Obama would be the education of the conservative public, that maybe they'd come out with a renewed interest in federalism or limited government or Austrian economics or the Federal Reserve, or in other words, issues that actually mean something. Or even, they might even learn something about the folly of overseas intervention, that it's just as stupid as domestic intervention. Instead, when I look at my Facebook feed, and apparently I must have added a lot of people indiscriminately years ago, what I see is people whose view of the world is Obama's a Muslim, Obama hates America, Obama wants to burn the flag, and he's a terrible guy. And that's what they have intellectually to show for 2 years of Barack Obama. They have not learned anything about statism or anything, and half of them want to use the state for 27 other things. Why isn't it statism rather than progressivism that's the problem?
Well, I think they're similar. I think progressivism is probably a subspecies of statism, but I think words are really important. I spend a lot of time in the book trying to focus on what words mean, and I don't know if that's going to be successful or not. But I think progressivism is out there, and I think it has historical roots that do connect the current era with the formal, you know, capital P, progressive era. We've got to call it something. If you don't have a name for your adversary, it's hard to defeat that adversary. And I just think that progressivism is a term that's more likely to catch on. I think it's already catching on, not just because of my book, but really over the past few years. I think people are using the word progressive more. I mean, Murray, you know, got this started 30 years ago by talking about it. So I think it's out there, and I think we should just try to use that word to describe this thing we're up against. More than statism, I think it's more of maybe an academic term.
All right, so then if we want to be concerned about definitions, go ahead and tell us what progressivism is, and then maybe where it comes from, what the origins of it are.
Well, it's not a super complicated concept, but I think you start out with this sort of knee-jerk reaction of the average person to any particular problem that comes up, that there's a government solution. And what I try to do in the book is I come up with sort of an 8-part test, and I really pick that simple sort of mindset apart and try to figure out all the beliefs and sub-propositions it entails. And I think they're really interesting because many of these elements or implications of that really simple idea, progressives themselves are probably not really aware of it. But the basic concept is this knee-jerk reaction that the government can solve any problem that comes up, but then you get into, well, as opposed to what? And that's why there's a lengthy discussion in the book that progressivism is really a reaction to classical liberalism, the view of limited government and free markets. So in order to understand progressivism, you have to understand classical liberalism. And I spend a number of pages going back to about 1650 with the help of Murray Rothbard and Ralph Rako and other great libertarian historians, and start out with that, because I think that progressivism is superimposed on top of that. And in the, certainly this small p progressivism that we're talking about now does have its roots in the formal progressive era. And I think that I think you have to go back to that progressive era and understand what was happening at that time to understand where we are now. But if that makes sense. But I think, to get maybe a little ahead of myself, there is a chapter in the book on the origins of progressivism, which is probably a tough task for one chapter in a primer to really deal with. But what I'm fundamentally trying to get at in the book is not necessarily the historical origins, but the actual, what I'm trying to capture is the mindset of the typical American today towards government. And it's, they probably may not have heard of Rousseau or post-millennial pietism. So in the book, I do talk about the origins to some extent, but I'm also trying to get into the psychology of why people have this political belief.
Where do you think indeed it comes from? I think it comes in large part, not, let's say, the people who founded it or who really are the pioneers of thought in it, but for the general public, I think it just comes from a reflex that is the result of years and years of indoctrination. I mean, if you're being told that this institution has given free or inexpensive medical care to millions of people, has saved the elderly from destitution, has cleaned up the air and the water, has leveled the economic playing field, I mean, you know, we just go down the list. Yeah, why no, wouldn't people be progressives?
I absolutely agree with that. And one of the points I make in the book is that progressivism is seeped into our subconscious, and even so-called conservatives, I think, are in many ways progressive. I think the Republican Party is many ways progressive. And it's been, this ideology has been around so long, and as you say, we learn about it in school. We all, you know, I went to a private high school, a good private high school, but I learned the progressive, you know, view of history and economics from the textbooks. It's been around so long that we hardly give it a second thought. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is to try to wake people up and get them just to realize that this is an ideology they've absorbed. Their parents believed it. You know, this the progressive era came around when, you know, my great grandparents were living, and we're born into it, and it's hard to get out of it, in spite of the best efforts of you know, the pioneers of the libertarian movement, you know, Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul and others. We're still in the infancy of explaining what this ideology is and how to get out of it.
How do you think conservatives have failed in their fight against progressivism? I see conservatives being self-congratulatory all the time about great victories, and they're nostalgic about Ronald Reagan. It just shows that they're just not serious. They really are not. And I say this as a former conservative myself. I find so many of them to be juvenile in their outlook. They really think that they've won victories. They've won nothing in the past 100 years. Why have they won nothing?
They won absolutely nothing. And by the way, I'm, according to Kindle, 20% through your recent book, and congratulations on it.
Thank you.
And there are some great conservative thinkers, Nisbet and Kirk and so on. But what I'm looking at in a primer format, I'm just sort of looking at conservatism as it's understood by, you know, the media and the public and conservatives themselves. And I go back to, you know, Barry Goldwater, 1964, comes on the stage, and I simply point out that I go through administration after administration, policy after policy, and just point out that, look, you people have not been able to roll back the progressive state. You haven't repealed a single major progressive program that I'm aware of. And then I go through maybe some of the flaws of conservatism and quoting Hayek and Mises. And I think really, again, words are important. It's good to have a word that has a clear meaning. And unfortunately, I don't think conservative does. And if you don't really know what it means, and people are always talking about the numerous factions of conservatism, well, if you don't know what it means and it's not really clear, how can you actually accomplish anything?
Yeah.
But there's a whole chapter on that, and I think you know people will find that really interesting. But that's the main I think problem with conservatism, that it's fuzzy, and if you have, you know, progressivism is a nice, clean, clear, you know, utopian, very appealing concept. And you can't fight that with a mishmash.
No, exactly right. And of course, people who are longtime listeners of this program will know that I have many friends, many good friends who are conservative. So I don't mean that as a blanket insult of everybody. I'm talking about the people I see in my Facebook feed who I take to be representative of the general run of conservatives. And it's like they've been defeated 8,000 times over, and they feel like, you know, they're actually holding steady, and you know, and yeah, we've had this one bad president we're going to have to try and come back from because he's a Muslim, but otherwise, you know, it's just nuts. It's crazy.
Well, I was just talking with a friend of mine who's active in the Republican Party, and we were chatting at a basketball game, of course, about politics, and I said, you know, Mike, Why do the Republicans always back down? And I think it's because they have no really core beliefs. I think that really in many ways Republicans have accepted, and conservatives have accepted, the progressive state that's been built up by Wilson, FDR, LBJ, and so on. And so really all it's about is winning the next election, and how they do that. Well, and as I explain in my book, it's the politics of personal destruction. They want you to focus on Obama allegedly being a Muslim, or Obama golfing too much, or Michelle takes too many vacations. And all the while, you're not thinking about the fact that the Republicans have not rolled back a single progressive program in 100 years.
I know it's not fair, it's sort of dirty pool to bring up Mitt Romney, because I realize that he is not a conservative, but it is typical, unfortunately, of some conservatives, that he had no overarching economic philosophy. Like, he was vaguely for the free market, but then he came out for an increase in the minimum wage, which means he thinks that labor markets don't really make sense, that they need to be violently interfered with. And then he said that if we cut the budget too much, we face a depression. So he basically thinks we need to have a fairly substantial amount of government spending. So in other words, he is where the progressives were 30 years earlier.
Yeah. And I talk a little bit about the book, and I wish I could do more of this, but I really think it's, you know, the virus of pragmatism, this notion that there really isn't any fixed truth, and you have to sort of make it up as you go along. And I think that's, you know, as I mentioned in the book, that's sort of the philosophical, you know, bodyguard of progressivism in its battle with what the older tradition of liberalism, which does believe that there are truths concerning natural rights. There is truth to be discovered in the realm of economics. And in response to that, these people say, well, it's, you know, that's your opinion. They're pragmatists, and therefore we can pretty much do whatever we want.
Well, let's suppose you're talking to a progressive. You've got it's such an uphill battle that I'm glad when former progressives say that something I did changed their minds or something, but I'm not aiming there because I don't think that's where my specialization lies. I think I'm better at reaching conservatives, but so that's what I mean. I feel like with conservatives, I've got an entry point because they supposedly believe in limited government, and then I can show how they're not acting that way. Whereas with progressives, I just find it so tricky to latch on to anything. And not only that, I've got to overcome a tremendous prejudice about the favorable role that government can play in people's lives. How do you go about this? Surely you must have conversations with progressives. You wrote a book on it.
Yep.
How do you approach it?
Well, in many ways, Tom, I have had these conversations ever since I got in the movement. I was about 20, and I was a sophomore in college. And many of my conversations have not been successful. But they gave me the fuel and the inspiration to write the book. And I guess the way that I want to deal with it is I want to have people obviously, you know, read the book and maybe figure out that, yes, I am a progressive, and I guess these eight elements, some of which make no sense, such as progressives have no theory of costs, and then explain, I use, I think, 13 examples of progressive programs, you know, Social Security. I tried to take the big ones, war on drugs and drug regulation, and just show how these elements do explain the failure, the actual failures of these policies. But I think overall, I guess you could say my view is that progressivism is a false attempt to get control over one's life. And however, if you give it really a modicum of thought, you realize that, well, the typical progressive doesn't have control over their life. In fact, they are, in fact, the ones controlled by this gigantic and ever-growing colossus that progressivism has created.
All right, how about this? How about this objection? Of course, the progressives, in saying, look, we just want to help people, they, you know, that sounds pretty good. I mean, the word progressive has favorable connotations. And what they're saying to somebody who isn't a student of political science sounds plausible enough. We got to help vulnerable people. We have to level the playing field. We have to provide equality. Whatever it is, that all sounds plausible. And it's true that, as you say, the conservatives are giving this muddied response. I mean, if people as diverse as Pat Buchanan and Bill Kristol and Colin Powell can be all considered conservatives, the term does not mean anything. And you're right that conservatives basically wind up just being Me Tooers. Well, yeah, I also favor government spending on that program, but a little bit less. And I mean, what kind of inspiration is that? But on the other hand, here's my objection. What if you did present to the public a really consistent anti-progressive ideology? I bet you 90% of the public would reject it indignantly.
I think they would, and I actually use the term or the figure 90%. I'm thrilled I think that the liberty movement has grown to, you know, perhaps 10% of the population if you look at Ron Paul's vote in particularly the last election. But I really think that we have to be realistic and realize that if you look at, you know, polling figures on Social Security, any number of other issues, you will find minimum wage. The vast majority of Americans do take the progressive position. So the notion that I think the typical Republican or conservative thinks, well, we're going to go out and get a good candidate and win the next election, I don't think so. I think you're going to have to lose a few elections and try to defend a position that is different from progressivism and explain why progressivism has failed. But they're not willing to lose an election. I think Murray used to call them right-wing opportunists. They're very focused on the now, but then winning, you know, how many elections have the Republicans won in the last 50 years? But nothing ever changed. Nothing was rolled back, obviously, with Ronald Reagan. I know you talk about him in your book. And Murray did as well. In fact, I had Murray at Brooklyn Law School in 1982 criticizing the Reagan administration. All the liberals were kind of shocked because they thought libertarians were extreme right wing. But we do have to focus on changing the mindset. In the book, I take that aim at an issue that I know is near and dear to your heart and you're working on, which is getting people out of the government schools, the indoctrination centers. And I know you're working hard on alternative curriculum for such efforts.
It's true. And of course, that's one of the key issues in terms of changing things for the future. If you have a good alternative curriculum that's rigorous and that presents points of view that are suppressed, it's not that they just don't get enough time in the government schools. They're suppressed altogether. This is one of the, I think, the best things we can do. I wonder about being able to educate the public through the political system. Of course, Ron Paul did a tremendous job with that. But by and large, the political arena is a terrible place to educate people, because we all know from public choice incentives and everything else that people don't vote on the basis of sitting down and rationally evaluating things. They look at the colors on the signs. They listen to the slogans. Who looks presidential? That seems fairly hopeless. But if you can educate from the beginning so that people's instincts are in favor of liberty and they don't need to be badgered about it, well, maybe that might have some effect.
Well, I agree, and as I point out in the book, even if you're trying to run an educational campaign, the media is 95% progressive, and they will always sort of tilt things away or make you sound like a kook or whatever. So I'm really, you know, and I'm a political consultant. I've actually been paid by a number of candidates, but I'm very pessimistic about the chances of using electoral politics to advance our movement. I wouldn't exclude the possibility. I'm a pragmatist, oddly enough, on strategy and tactics, but I really think we have to look at direct action, and obviously education, I think, is the most important thing. And just getting, you know, I wrote a prior book about, you know, government schools are bad for your kids. And I think we need to convince people to pull their kids out. You need to win the victory one family at a time and either use a private school, as we do in our family, or homeschool. And that is the number one battle. But as long as people are, you know, politics is fun, it's entertaining. You've been involved in it. I've been involved in it to some extent. It's fun, but some of the things we need to do maybe aren't as much fun, but they'll be much more productive in the long run.
You have a section in here in which you go through 10 different things that you recommend people do, so I'll let people check that out for themselves. Share with us any parting words you have. The book, again, is Progressivism, A Primer on the Idea Destroying America. Give us your parting thoughts on this general subject.
Well, I hope people check out the book. I'm a busy person. I'm a practicing lawyer, and I don't have the time to write a book that is sort of a duplication of what's been done. I think there's some good original material in there, but also building on existing libertarian scholarship. Check it out. Hopefully you will then go on to read more material from people like Rothbard and Woods and Rako. And I urge people to support the Mises Institute and LouRockwell.com. Both of which have been very helpful to me in putting this book out there. And I'm going to continue the fight, and I'll have some, you know, creative, interesting tactics on libertymovement.org as soon as about a month from now.
All right, we're going to put all this stuff, that link, the book, other stuff, over on the show notes page for today's episode. This is episode number 352, so the show notes page will be tomwoods.com/352. Jim, thanks for your time today. Best of luck with the book.
Thanks, and good luck with your new book as well.
All right, everybody, tomwoods.com/352 is the place for you. Remember, I was on a cruise not too long ago with Bob Murphy, and we spent some time plotting. And one of the things we did was think of what can Bob teach for Liberty Classroom this year. He's going to be joining us very, very soon. And we came up with a couple of courses that are just going to knock your socks off in terms of the amount of economics you're going to learn and the understanding you're going to walk away with. Oh, it's just great. You know, I'd love to tell you the exact details, but where would be the fun in that, right? I want to save that for the surprise when it's all ready, but it's going to be great. So it's a wonderful year to join us over at libertyclassroom.com using coupon code SHOW in all caps for a special discount for you show listeners. Tomorrow we're going to analyze the Netanyahu speech. And what are we going to do the rest of the week? I don't know. Something. I don't know. I think we may actually do an episode on the case for optimism, because I can't tell if I should be optimistic or depressed or whatever. So we're going to bring Frank Karsten back on and talk about that. So fun stuff coming up this week. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss a single episode. Tell your friends about the show. And thanks so much for listening.
The Tom Woods Show.